Chapter 5. Just because the battle is over doesn't mean that the fight has ended. The surroundings of the battlefield changes, but there's still fighting. It's just that the men don't fight for the Republic anymore. They fight for their lives, whether that be their own or that of others. The tension remains long after the battle has ended, when the medics wage war on their battlefield. Later, the men will come to terms with the ever-present consequences of war. Grieve and mourn when they know who should be grieved and mourned. Obi-Wan tries to help, if only a little. He isn't allowed to really do anything, both because he is still considered recovering and because he isn't actually part of the Gar. And certainly, he isn't in a position to offer comfort. He might understand what the men are going through out of his own experience, but he isn't one of them, doesn't belong, doesn't have a place or a part in this, and he knows that. So, he does what he can. He brings ration bars and sandwiches to the medbay's break room, so there's food should anyone need it. He finds a linen closet and brings blankets up to the mess to drape over the shoulders of men that have fallen asleep at the table. It's not much, but it's something. He keeps it up until he runs into Steady in the break room. Tramvir, the medic greets, surprise coloring his voice. His eyes easily find the new batch of sandwiches Obi-Wan is holding, and then flicker over to the table. That was you. Obi-Wan nods. Steady looks at him with surprise in his eyes. It melts away for gratefulness quickly. Thank you, Steady says. He regards Obi-Wan for a few moments longer, and then raises an eyebrow. Although I suggest you take a break before you pass out and end up being a problem in my medbay. Obi-Wan shakes his head. Yes, he's tired with a dull ache in both his ribs and his leg, but compared to everyone else on the Maverick, that hardly counts. I'm fine. We appreciate your effort, Kenobi, but less than a week ago, you almost died, Steady says, to the point and without hesitation. Get some rest. As if Obi-Wan's remaining energy realizes that it's actually run out at Steady's words, a wave of exhaustion washes over Obi-Wan. He yawns. Obi-Wan doesn't get a chance to tell Steady that, yes, perhaps he should rest. The CMO is called back to medbay for an emergency before he can. He slept for a few hours when his door chimes. He opens it, groggily, and still feeling the remnants of sleep clinging to him, to find a trooper on the other side. Tramvir, the trooper greets him with a quick salute. General Jin asked me to escort you to the bridge. Obi-Wan frowns. He hasn't been to the bridge before, and he's quite surprised that he is being summoned there now. He follows without hesitation, though. He doubts the trooper has information, and even if he does, Obi-Wan doesn't want to put him in the kind of position where he's asked to share something that he might have been ordered not to. They take the turbolift directly to the bridge. There's a bustle of activity, clones in blue-marked armor now joining those of the 212th in orange markings. The trooper leading Obi-Wan sidesteps all his brothers, though, and beckons for Obi-Wan to follow him to the middle of the bridge, where General Jin, Cody, and two other men are standing. Even from a distance, Obi-Wan can guess who the young man in Jedi garb is, even if the hollow in Padme's bedroom features an Anakin Skywalker that is quite a few years younger. The clone standing next to him has striking blonde hair, and his blue-marked armor looks distinctly different from Cody's. All four men look up when they near, and Obi-Wan feels a tad underdressed, considering he's been in standard blacks ever since he's been released from medbay. At least someone was kind enough to give him a size up, so that they're not as tight-fitting as the sets the men wear, but it still hardly feels like he's dressed. Certainly not when standing in front of four men that have obviously just come from a battlefield. But alas, such is life. Thank you, Trapper, Jin tells the trooper with a nod before turning to Obi-Wan. Triumvir, thank you for joining us. I wanted to introduce you to Captain Rex. Jin gestures toward the blonde clone. And General Anakin Skywalker. Jin waves a hand to the other man standing next to him. Obi-Wan gives both the captain and Skywalker a nod as Jin tells them, Rex, Anakin, this is Triumvir Obi-Wan Kenobi of Melodon. Skywalker flashes Obi-Wan a smile. Padme's friend, he says. It's good to see you safe and well. Thank you. If it wasn't for you and the 212th, I'd certainly be dead, Obi-Wan replies. Then he adds, And it is good to finally meet another friend of Padme's. In fact, he will admit he's been rather curious about the man Padme has fallen in love with, mainly because she herself has told him so desperately little about the man. He doesn't quite expect Skywalker to frown. Pat, Senator Amidala talks to you about things. Well, we have known one another for a long time. Skywalker's expression slips from jovial to haughty as he crosses his arms in front of his chest. I've known her longer. Well, then, he hadn't expected Padme to be into the childish type, but he supposes that it just goes to show how well one truly knows a friend. I doubt it, Obi-Wan says with a raised eyebrow. Then, before the other can bristle, he adds, Although I am grateful we are both friends with someone as kind-hearted as Padme, had it not been for our close friendships with her, I surely would have died. Placated, quite easily so, Skywalker hums. It's sad the 501st couldn't come to your rescue, but we were otherwise occupied, he says, and then a grin creeps onto his face. Although the babysitting afterwards fits my master better, perhaps. Perhaps not as placated as Obi-Wan had thought. Jin sighs. Anakin. Anakin holds up his hands. I meant no offense, of course, Triumvir, he says. It sounds like a lie, which is proven right when he speaks his next words. But a politician on a battleship isn't exactly useful. Of course, Obi-Wan mutters, not able to come up with a more eloquent quip back as he's left wondering exactly what Padme sees in the sky. Next to Jin, Cody clears his throat. If I may, General Skywalker, he says, and doesn't actually wait for Skywalker to give him the go-ahead before saying, The Triumvir has hardly been a useless passenger. Both Skywalker and Rex look surprised at the words. Obi-Wan is too, but in a rather pleasant way, and he can't stop himself from shooting Cody a small smile. Jin merely sighs, rubbing his temple. That's enough, I'd say. Anakin, we have a debriefing with the Council soon. Yes, all right, Skywalker replies, and turns his frown away from Obi-Wan to give his master a tight smile. Let's get that over with, he says, and strides away toward the doors. Jin shakes his head, looking more amused than anything else, and after giving Obi-Wan, Cody, and Rex a nod, follows Skywalker out of the room. Well, he seems pleasant, Obi-Wan mutters, once the two Jedi have left. Granted, it's more to himself than anything else. That doesn't stop Cody from chuckling. Skywalker is an acquired taste. Hey, Rex calls. That's my general you're talking about. A great fit, Cody tells Rex with a smirk, considering you are an acquired taste too. Rex scoffs and gives Cody a playful shove. And it seems you have acquired a new taste, he says with a smirk. Cody grabs Rex's arm before he can pull back. What is that even supposed to mean? He asks with feigned worry and places his free hand against the back of Rex's head. Are you okay? Did you hit your head? I'm fine, you asshole, Rex grumbles as he pushes Cody's hands away. You must have gotten hurt during the battle, Cody says, completely ignoring Rex's words. He turns to Obi-Wan, who has been watching the exchange with open amusement. Please excuse us, Obi-Wan, he says as he starts bodily pushing Rex toward the bridge's exit. I have to bring my idiot little brother to the med bay. All right, Obi-Wan says with a laugh, the two reminding him a lot of Hem and Neeld. Wow, first name basis, Rex cries in delight. Wow, Codes, you really, ow, you hit me. It's another 2 days before the Maverick and the Resolute depart. and Obi-Wan is informed that he will get to Melodon in 3 days at most. He has his last physical therapy session with Liga. Afterwards, the man takes him to the medbay so Study can do a final checkup and give Obi-Wan his dossier. Ideally, both Study and Liga would talk to the doctors taking over Obi-Wan's care at home, but all three decide that chances of that happening are slim. So both have written detailed reports on Obi-Wan's progress that he can share with Rowenny and her team when he gets home. There is also his last dinner aboard, which turns into a merry affair. Obi-Wan had expected to be mostly by himself, but it only takes 10 minutes before he's joined by the men from Ghost, Thumper, and some others he's not sure he's properly met before. It's all laughter and jokes with so many questions thrown at Obi-Wan. When the trays are cleared, it's a blonde trooper named Cries that breaks out a bottle of booze, accompanied by many grins and some cheers. Attention! There's a beat of silence, a spike of panic in the Force, and then all the men jump up. Obi-Wan, the only one still seated, glances over his shoulder to find Cody standing in the doorway. As you were, Cody says with a curt nod. The men relax and sit down, right as Cody's eyes fall onto the bottle on the table. His eyebrow twitches. Although, might I suggest a sense of subtlety and decorum before I sign all of you up for a refresher course in spatial awareness? I don't think that's necessary, sir, Boyle says jovially as Cries hides the bottle under the table. Just a misunderstanding, is all. Cody gives him an unimpressed look. A misunderstanding about my schedule, I'm sure. Obi-Wan's best guess is that homebrew, because really, the liquid can't be anything else, isn't actually allowed aboard according to Gar regulation. It doesn't surprise him the men have it, though. A ship this size with this many men aboard, he's certain there's improvised distilleries around. But there's a big difference between drinking it in the barracks with your squad and slamming a bottle down onto a table in the middle of the mess with both your commanding officer and a head of state right there with you. Not that Obi-Wan minds. Neither does Cody, judging by the amusement and exasperation curling around him. But that's something only Obi-Wan knows. Cody's face is a perfectly neutral mask as he gives Cries a deadpan look. This won't be a regular occurrence, he warns. And whoever is on shift tomorrow better not be late nor hungover. He lets his gaze travel around the table. Understood? A chorus of, yes, sir, goes up, and when Cody says, then by all means, have at it, the bottle is back onto the table in less than a second. As is a small stack of shot glasses, and Obi-Wan isn't sure if he wants to know how the men got a hold of that. He sees Cody line up for some food, but his attention is drawn when his name is called. He looks around to find Cries grinning at him, waving the bottle in his direction. Want one? Brew it ourselves, Boyle adds with a proud smirk. Longshot nods excitedly. Yeah, they have a makeshift distillery and... He falls silent abruptly when he is shushed by his fellow troopers. He waves a hand in the air with an awkward chuckle. Well, somewhere. Obi-Wan frowns at the bottle being held out to him. What is it exactly? Cries raises an eyebrow. Alcohol. I mean, yes, I can smell that, Obi-Wan laughs. Any particular kind? He's not much of a drinker himself, although he does enjoy an occasional glass of Jonge Genevieve, a liquor made from grain and juniper berries from Melodon. Cries says helplessly. Boyle chuckles. The alcoholic one. Maybe just a bit, Obi-Wan says, feeling very much like he will be regretting this. As Cries pours him a small glass, he sees Cody sit down at a corner of the table, as far removed from them as possible. Cody won't join, he asks Waxer, who is sitting next to him. No, the commander doesn't often join. Waxer shakes his head. Plausible deniability and all that, you know? He normally sits in the corner, though, here or in the rec room. Does some paperwork, but still gets a sense of the atmosphere. Obi-Wan frowns. Cody joining the group a few days back must have been an exception. But it sounds rather lonely, even if he does understand. As their superior officer, it's probably best Cody keeps more to himself, especially in a moment such as this. When booze is on the table and a brimful cup of it is served to Obi-Wan. Bottoms up, Cries cheers, and holds out his shot to Obi-Wan expectantly. The drink burns all the way down, the lack of flavor a testament to the strength of the alcohol. Obi-Wan grimaces. Kark, this stuff can strip the paint off of armor. Sure can, Boyle smirks. Another one? Kryze asks with a grin. Obi-Wan chuckles. No thanks, I think I'm good. Wooly laughs. I'll have another one. Kryze chortles, says, of course you will, and pours the other another drink. Speaking of armor, Obi-Wan looks to his right, where Thumper is looking at him with a hopeful expression and radiating nervousness. I wanted to ask what dried flax looks like. Do you have a hollow? Thumper asks. Obi-Wan raises an eyebrow. Somehow, this feels important. Why are you asking? Thumper fidgets for a moment. Well, it's just, you said it's gold, right? And I just thought, I've earned my paint now. You know, he says softly and awkwardly. Someone laughs. It's one of the clones Obi-Wan doesn't know. Gonna marry him too? Shut up, Thumper hisses back with a scowl. Obi-Wan saved mine and the commander's lives. You think that's stupid? I'd be honored, Thumper, Obi-Wan says with a warm smile, before the two can start an argument. He certainly doesn't want that to happen due to him, of all things. Thumper shakes his head with widened eyes. Oh no, no, the honor is all mine. Obi-Wan chuckles. Thumper's enthusiasm is quite endearing, even if he's not sure he deserves it. Either way, I'd be happy to show you some hollows of flax, he promises. You want a drink to that? Kryze asks, waving the bottle at Obi-Wan with a grin. Obi-Wan declines with a laugh. By the time the bottle is empty and the troopers start leaving to bunk down, or continue their drinking somewhere else, Cody is still sitting at his corner table with his data pad. As if he feels that he's being watched, he raises his eyes from his work. He looks amused when he finds Obi-Wan watching him, raising an eyebrow as if to silently ask if something's wrong. Obi-Wan shakes his head and turns back to the conversation Boyle and Waxer are having. Or rather, a slightly tipsy Waxer is talking longingly about the nest of Tukas they'd found during a campaign, and the other is comforting him that they're probably having the time of their life running around that planet. That's when Cody steps up to the table, datapad tucked under his arm. He's looking at Obi-Wan and not even pretending that he's addressing the table. I'm heading back. You want to join me so you don't get lost on your last evening aboard? He offers to Obi-Wan with a small grin. There's an amused silence around them. No need to go through the effort, Obi-Wan objects politely, even if he wouldn't mind. He shouldn't feel like he needs a few last private moments with Cody before he leaves the Maverick. He shouldn't. That doesn't mean his feelings listen. Our rooms are in the same corridor, so it's no effort, Cody casually says. Well, all right then. To ensure I don't get lost, Obi-Wan says, and turns to the men at the table. It's been a pleasure. Pleasure's been all ours, Wooly says, and Obi-Wan leaves the mess with Cody, chased by a chorus of goodbyes. Leaving the mess, Obi-Wan wonders if there's something the other wants to talk to him about. I hope you had some more time to catch up with Rex after your visit to the medbay, he says conversationally. I did, Cody says, face softening with a fond smile on his lips. I don't see him as often as I'd like, so these moments are always appreciated. Little brother, that's what Cody had called Rex, and while it had been well teasing, he doubts the sentiment was fake. Good. Family is important, Obi-Wan says, thinking of his own family of choice back on Melodon. It is, Cody agrees easily. They're far away enough from the mess now that the hallway has quieted down. It seems it's all the commander needs to bring up his desired topic. Speaking of which, I heard what you did for the men after the battle. Cody speaks softly, glancing sideways so that he can look at Obi-Wan. You didn't have to. We rescued you without expecting anything in return. Obi-Wan shakes his head. I wanted to. They reach the turbolift, and as they wait for it to arrive, Cody says with a small, confused frown, I thought you don't support this war. I don't. Obi-Wan shakes his head. But that doesn't mean that I can't offer you and the men some kindness and comfort, he says. The turbolift arrives, and they get into it in silence. Only after he has selected the floor and the lift starts to move, does Cody say, "You're a man with many different sides, it seems." He doesn't sound surprised, really, merely curious. It's a feeling Obi-Wan shares. "So are you." Cody hums. "And apparently I have a side which you knew prior to our meeting." Obi-Wan lets out a startled chuckle. "Trying again?" he asks, thinking back to their first conversation together. "In actually the same setting as this." "That's yet another side of me. I don't give up," Cody says. He looks at Obi-Wan, considering the man with a face that gives absolutely nothing away. Obi-Wan stays silent, lets the commander sort through his thoughts, and patiently waits for the other to continue, because force is he curious what the words will be. He doesn't expect Cody to grin sharply and teasingly say, "I should give you my comm code, in case you ever change your mind and want to tell me." Despite the grin and the teasing tone, there is a question in those words that has absolutely nothing to do with Obi-Wan telling Cody how he knows the man. They both know that he won't. No, this isn't about the past at all. It's about the future. A roundabout way of asking to stay in touch. Obi-Wan should say no. It's bad enough that he's gotten to like the men of the 212th, gotten to like Cody, while on the Maverick. When he's back on Melodon, he really should cut contact and continue his life staying out of this war and away from any clones. But both the Force and something far away in his heart disagree. Tell him it would be a tragedy never to talk to Cody again, to lose the easy conversation and the banter, to lose that whisper of promise that seems to surround the man. And so, despite the better judgment of 2 decades of hiding himself away from Marshal Commander Cody, Obi-Wan says, "You should." Zarassi and Neeld are waiting at the edge of one of the landing pads of Zahava's spaceport when the LAAT arrives. A contrast, as always. Zarassi's always been on the shorter side, with ivory-freckled skin and copper hair that she's pulled up into a messy bun. Neeld, on the other hand, is tall, with rich brown skin and dark hair that's buzzed down to the millimeter. When the LAAT touches down and Obi-Wan steps out onto the landing pad, neither waste a moment to draw Obi-Wan into a hug, one on each side. "It's good to have you back," Zarassi whispers into his hair. "Don't ever do that again," Neeld threatens, while squeezing Obi-Wan tight. When they draw back, they hold out their palms to one another, just as he'd told Cody. Obi-Wan closes his eyes, reveling in the feeling of their familiar presence washing over him. Force, how he's missed them. "It's good to be back," he whispers, and none of them care that his voice is thick with emotion. "Just unfortunate that it's the Gar that had to save you," Neeld mutters, his eyes turning to the LAAT, where Jin, Cody, and a few other troopers have come to escort Obi-Wan back to the planet's surface. "Neeld," Obi-Wan says, both to scold his friend and to calm him down. Because while Neeld appears pleasant enough on the outside, around him the Force is a whirlwind. But it's not the wariness when he looks at the clones that takes Obi-Wan by surprise. It's the anger and disdain that is hot around him as he looks at Jin. The same can be said for Zarassi. Usually the more subdued and level-headed of the two, her polite smile feels mocking when one can so clearly feel her hostility towards Jin. They know how to shield. Obi-Wan's taught them, which means they're simply refusing to. "General Jin," Neeld says in greeting, stepping up to the LAAT and the general in question. "It seems war has found you despite your best efforts." "Unfortunately," Jin allows, looking perfectly unbothered by the words. Instead, he gives Neeld a pleasant smile. "Although, this time it put us in a position where we could rescue Triumvir Kenobi. Something I am extremely grateful for," Obi-Wan says, stepping up beside Neeld before the other can reply. He shoots Cody, who is standing just a step behind Jin's left shoulder, a smile. Cody is wearing his helmet, so Obi-Wan can't see the other's expression. But when he gets a curt nod in return, it's not hard to imagine a small smile on the other's face. As are we, Sarasi says, laying a hand against his shoulder. Her green eyes are on the LAAT, though, on the troopers inside, on the armor they're wearing, and it's easy to feel her unease. She seems to shake it off quickly, though, turning to Jin with a raised eyebrow. Quite a few men you've brought along, General. Were you hoping for a tour of the place, or... Obi-Wan resists the urge to sigh. Or they just came to drop me off. I'm sure the General and Commander, and the whole Star Destroyer full of people, have better things to do. Shame, Neild says, with a shrug and raises an eyebrow at Jin. It's really cleaned up since your last visit. There is an inkling of shock coming from the troops. It's not difficult to figure out something isn't quite right, hearing what Neild has said, and vigilant and perceptive as they are, Obi-Wan is certain they are piecing information together. He glances from the men in the LAAT to Jin. He hopes that whatever conclusion they come to won't change their relationship with their general. Perhaps next time, Jin says, and that's that. With a last few words of goodbye, Jin orders his men to depart. Obi-Wan watches the LAAT lift off, pretending he doesn't feel a heavy weight in his chest. Now that the shit show is over, Neild says as he slings an arm around Obi-Wan's shoulder. He gives him a once-over with a raised eyebrow. Let's get you some actual clothes. For a lingering second, Obi-Wan keeps his eyes on the rapidly disappearing dot the LAAT has become. It's all for the best, he tells himself. It doesn't matter that the Force is a whisper of a future promise around him. Things are as they are meant to be, with Obi-Wan on Melodon and the Gar as far away as possible. You don't think I look good in this? He asks Neild, ducking out from under the other's arm. He waves at the pair of oversized blacks that he's wearing. I'm starting to think black's really my color. Sarasi chuckles. It may be your color, but it leaves very little to the imagination. Obi-Wan chuckles. Mine is a size up from what I normally wear. You should have seen the clones. Theirs were almost skin tight. How do you know that? Neild asks with a frown. Did you look? Obi-Wan rolls his eyes and decides that that certainly does not deserve a reply. He starts making his way over to the speeder, waiting for them at the edge of the landing pad. How did you become such a prude? Sarasi asks with a teasing laugh. He has eyes. He's allowed to look. Shut up, Neild hisses at Sarasi, and then shouts, Obi-Wan, get back here! Obi-Wan keeps walking, laughing. It's good to be back. The speeder's first stop is the hospital, weaving its way through Zahava's streets. After the war, not much had been left of the city. They'd had to rebuild, and do it quickly to house all the people. They'd chosen Duracrete, easy to make and not taking away more of the already scarce natural resources on Melodon. Zahava had looked bleak and drab those first few years with only gray Duracrete buildings. No matter how sleek their designs were with the big picture windows and smaller openings to let light flood into Duracrete boxes that were homes to many, it still felt like a gray cloud. But they were homes with roofs and heating, so no one complained. And then the trees had taken root. Then the vines had started crawling up the walls. Then the gray was starting to lighten under the sun. Now, Melodon is as green as it is gray. The main streets are wide to allow both speeders and pedestrians their space, and lined with trees. Now, some buildings aren't gray anymore, but pop in color as much as the flax does in the summer with its flowers. To this day, even if resources are better now, most new buildings are made from Duracrete. They are sleek buildings, but at the same time, they are functional. A reminder where they've come from, and a proud statement of where they're going. And then, there is the hospital. In Obi-Wan's vision, it had been the most vulnerable building in the city. Now, though, it is the most fortified one. Its outer walls are ferrocrete, its windows blaster-proof transparasteel, but its biggest protection is its two-story underground bunker. Rowenny is already waiting at the entrance when they arrive. She's in a white pair of pants and a short white coat on top of her magenta scrub top.
It makes her skin, Pantoran light blue with patches of light beige, stand out. Her white hair is pulled into a braid. She stands on her tiptoes and pulls Obi-Wan into a careful, quick hug. How are you? Obi-Wan pulls back from the hug with a smile. All right, he promises. Steady had declared him healing well, after all, and the pain of his healing ribs is well under control with the help of regular painkillers. Rowenny hums and waves for him to follow her into the hospital. We'll see about that, she says. I've read CMO Steady's report, but I'd like to do my own evaluation. I've also forwarded the dossier the physical therapist wrote to Pippin. He'll want to do his own assessments too, before continuing your PT sessions, she explains, as they make their way over to the elevators. When they reach them, she turns and looks surprised when she sees Neild and Cerasi. What are you two doing? Neild and Cerasi look at each other before Neild answers. We thought we could join. On a medical appointment, Rowenny asks with a raised eyebrow, the fact she only reaches up to Neild's nose, not doing anything to make her look less intimidating. She glances at Obi-Wan. Only if you want to. That won't be necessary, Obi-Wan shakes his head and looks at the other two. I'll see you two afterwards, all right? Both Neild and Cerasi look reluctantly accepting. I guess, Neild mumbles. Neild's worry is a testament to how scared they must have been, as he normally leaves the worrying to Cerasi and Obi-Wan. You can call for a council meeting in the meantime, he says. Cerasi frowns. You want to work? Obi-Wan shrugs, feels his ribs complain at the jerky motion, but doesn't wince lest he worry his friends even more. I think the whole council needs to know what happened, considering the fact that this looks like an assassination attempt. There's a beat of silence at the reminder. Cerasi is the first to recover. Yes, of course. We'll call for a meeting. We're just worried, Neild adds. Obi-Wan smiles. I know, but it's over now. I'm home. Rowenny finishes her examination with the conclusion Steady has done a good job and a warning to Obi-Wan to please take it easy. I know you need to speak with the council and have other pressing responsibilities, but as your doctor, I advise you don't return to your full days right away. I know, Rowenny interrupts Obi-Wan, pinning him down with a pointed look. I know you're a workaholic. I know you have the force. I know you haven't had a headache for the last 2 days. But that doesn't mean you've fully recovered and a gradual return to work and physical activity is recommended. Your thinking, focus, and mental processing may all still be affected by the injury, and I won't give you a clean bill of health yet. Rowenny's admonishing reminds Obi-Wan of Thumper, sitting in the bed across from him, wondering if all medics are the same. His amusement must show on his face, because Rowenny sighs and asks, "What?" I met a trooper, Thumper. He wondered if all medics are as terrifying as Steady. I assume you told him they are, Rowenny says, flashing him a grin. Obi-Wan chuckles. I did. Good, she replies, pleased, but flattery won't change my advice. After Rowenny's examination and a 20-minute wait, Obi-Wan has his appointment with Pepin, the lead physical therapist at Zahava's hospital. It's a smooth appointment, Pepin nothing but friendly professionalism as they hash out a schedule with daily PT sessions for Obi-Wan. He checks his comm when he leaves the hospital and hails a taxi. He's got a message from Cerasi. Council meeting at 5. Go home, take a shower, and rest for a bit. I'll come pick you up at 4. It's 11 now, which means he's got a solid 5 hours. A relief, if he's honest. He sends a quick affirmative back to Cerasi and takes a taxi home. Home is a modest-sized top-floor apartment near the government building. The duracrete is a mellow terracotta tone, and the set of black durasteel stairs lead up to the front door on the 4th floor. The exterior of the building had charmed Obi-Wan, from the color to the sweeping curved balconies that frame a large tree. And then he had seen the inside, with large floor-to-ceiling windows set in black durasteel frames and dark honeyed hardwood floors. He'd signed the contract right away, and moved in with his impressive book collection and gathering of force-sensitive plants. He's not too big on plants, but the force-sensitive ones hold a special place in his heart. Now, as he takes the stairs up to his home, he finds himself worrying for his plants. He's, of course, asked Sarasi and Neil to water them, but it's not the same. When he opens his door, he's greeted by the soothing presence of his plants. They reach out to him in the Force, relieved and welcoming, and Obi-Wan sends a soothing apology back in reply. It's like a balm, stroking his fingers down the leaves of his plants. The Murakami orchid, the singing fern, and the glowing anemone. Last, there is a purple foxglove that is poisonous to touch for all but Obi-Wan. Once he's greeted his plants, he goes to the fresher and allows himself a leisurely soak under the hot spray. He's missed the freedom of being able to linger under the hot water. He doesn't do it often, but when he does, it's always blissful. He does hope the clones get that chance every now and then, but somehow he doubts it. Unbidden, his mind flashes back to one particular shower he'd taken on the Maverick, of water dripping down glistening brown skin littered with scars, of the weight of a pair of eyes on him. Here, in the safety of his own home, he closes his eyes with a shuddering breath as the electric fire of arousal wakes within him, imagining, fantasizing. What if? What if they'd been alone in the shower room? What if their eyes had caught and Obi-Wan had gotten to kiss those lips that look nothing but inviting every time they curl into a smirk? What if they'd shared a spray and Obi-Wan had gotten the chance to caress those scars? And what kind of sounds would that draw from Cody? Kark. He shakes his head and opens his eyes. It's easy to imagine it here, at home alone with Cody, nothing but a promise in the Force that he ought to forget. He takes a deep breath, and as he breathes out, long and slow and trying to release all his arousal and emotions for Cody into the Force, turns the water cold. It's a chaotic council meeting. Normally, they are well organized. Nowadays, at least. It had taken at least a decade to set up a government that felt competent and confident, rather than a bunch of elected victims to run a clown show. Now, there is the triumvirate, made up of Obi-Wan, Sarasi, and Neil, functioning as equal heads of state, and the people's elected council. The council consists of 8 ministers representing agriculture and nature, culture and education, defense, finance, health, infrastructure, intergalactic affairs, and planetary affairs. Unlike the triumvirate, the ministers are elected every 4 years. They assist and advise in Melodon's day-to-day affairs and vote when legislation is to be passed or important decisions need to be made that impact several ministries. They also have the right to call for a vote of no confidence, directed at either another minister or the triumvirate, a democratic safeguard that to this day has not been needed. Their normal meetings are held with a strict agenda and set time per topic. But with Obi-Wan's return and the topic of the meeting being the investigation of his attempted assassination, it's a challenge to get the room to settle. Once it does, Obi-Wan shares what happened. Sarasi and Neild have already briefed them, but it's different hearing it from Obi-Wan himself. He gives all details he can remember that feel significant, from when he crashed to being rescued by the Gar and their, Jyn's, following accusations. The news is received with varying reactions, some understanding the position of the Gar, while others pose the same questions that Neil had had. Next, Delia shares the start of her pending investigation. As Minister of Defense, she's been named responsible for the task force investigating the matter. "We've analyzed the black box data you've sent us and started to look into the moon you crashed on to see if they might provide us with any clues. So far, we unfortunately have very little," she says, and looks at Obi-Wan. "We'll set up some private meetings with you during the next few days, Triumvir Kenobi. I know you've given us a full report, but I think it's important we speak with you separately and have a chance to ask our questions. As long as it's not too many. I haven't been cleared for full duty yet," Obi-Wan says. Delia raises an eyebrow. "Then wouldn't it have been better to postpone this meeting?" Obi-Wan shakes his head and looks around the table. "I wanted all of you to be informed. I don't think something will happen on Melodon, but it is still a matter of our governmental security. This isn't something any of us have ever dealt with, and I want the communication to be as open as possible. So if there are any questions, now would be your chance to ask them." After the meeting, Delia quickly finds her way to Obi-Wan. She's a tall woman, but standing next to his chair in a pair of high-waisted black pants, she looks even taller. She curves a gentle hand around his shoulder, her warm brown skin a stark contrast against Obi-Wan's tawny beige. Her dark eyes shine in relief as she looks down at him. "You're lucky you survived," she states, direct and to the point, as always. Obi-Wan shoots her a teasing smile. "Good to see you too, my dear." Delia brushes a frizzy strand of her thick black hair out of her face with a frown. "I saw the data from the black box, Obi-Wan. I know how karking lucky you are." Obi-Wan sighs. "I'm even luckier the Gar found me. If they hadn't, I'd have frozen to death." Delia squats down next to the chair, leaning her elbows onto its arm and looking up at Obi-Wan with a serious expression. "As your friend, I'll admit I'm not sure if we can get to the bottom of this, but we'll try." "I know. Even if we find out, we might not be able to do much about it." Delia smiles sadly. They both know that finding out who was behind this is more for form than anything else. They're small, independent Melodon. What can they do? "Why you?" she wonders. Obi-Wan frowns. "Perhaps they were hoping for any of the three of us, considering we shared the ship and used it for official business." Delia sighs, the ghost of a smile on her lips. "With the ease with which trouble finds you, I doubt that." Obi-Wan can't quite say that she's wrong, so he shrugs and says, "Guess we'll have to wait and see." So show-